For those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Diane Fleck, and I'm the founder of the Learning Cafe, which is a small business resource and learning center. I'm also a management consultant, a business coach, and I work with entrepreneurs to help them grow their business. Today, we have a presenter, which is Ken Anderson, and he's going to talk to us today about to pay or not to pay. Let me read a little bit about Ken, and by the way, some housekeeping information first. I believe this call was set on Q&A, so if you have a question you'd like to ask, push *6, and that'll open up the line. If you're done, hit *6, and that'll mute your line as well. So let me get started. Ken is also one of our top advisors in the Advisor Network, and his background is unique as an HR expert, and that he worked for 25 years in operational and sales management. He is a degreed engineer and past president of a public company. Ken brings a lot of experience in working with small businesses. He has his SPHR California certificate, I can't even say that this morning, my tongue's not working, which has been renewed twice by the Society of Human Resource Management. As the Director of Human Resource Practice at MMW, Ken Anderson leads a group which brings real solutions and value to clients and their employees. Welcome, Ken, to the call.
Oh, thank you very much, Dan. It's good to be here today.
Great. You want to just go ahead and get started then?
Okay. Yeah, today I thought a good subject that seems to be hitting the news a lot lately, in the HR world anyway, is about exempt and non-exempt employees, and that's whether to pay overtime or not to pay overtime in regards to employees that work for you. And it's based in the Federal Act of 1938, which was passed, which first, believe it or not, set the minimum wage at 25 cents an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was really targeted at child labor, but since then it's evolved, and the Federal Standards Labor Act has its subsets, and each state can pass better or more severe laws, and California seems to be a leader in defining hourly or exempt and non-exempt employees in an aggressive manner, I should say. And over the last several years, it's become a major item because companies like Walmart and Starbucks and B of A, Citicorp, IBM, companies that we know about, have had major lawsuits, multi-million dollar lawsuits, filed against them successfully in regards to classifying employees incorrectly and not giving them breaks and not giving them lunch and not paying them overtime in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has brought this subject into the news for the everyday worker, in the sense that they now have a sense that they may be entitled to some of this stuff, and have filed a lot of labor suits in the labor board here in California, in particular, that has led to major settlements for overtime. And when that happens to someone, the problem is that the state has their own way to determine how much you owe that person, since you have no records. And so I'd like to step back and kind of begin at the beginning here. The best way to look at this is everybody in the United States has a right to work on an hourly basis. That's the fundamental of the law, okay? And that's called, you're not exempt from the law, and that's non-exempt. And you have to be paid hourly, and you get paid, and you're eligible for overtime, and you're eligible for lunch, and you're eligible for breaks. That's pretty much what that means. Not in total. And then on top of that, each state has the right to pass laws saying who is exempt from that law. That's the word exempt comes from non-exempt, from the hourly law, exempt. And there are only a few classifications. In federal law, there's only four exempt classifications, generally. And in California, there's seven or six, I believe, six generally accepted. There are some all kinds of exceptions to these things, but they're the ones we work with on a daily basis anyway. And so what that leads to is the fact that a lot of people pay people on a salary, and they think they're exempt from overtime. And that's in lies where all these new lawsuits have come about. So if anybody has any questions at this point, we can stop and answer those questions, or if you want me to just go on, let me know.
Well, maybe what would be helpful for me is if you could, what's the key characteristics or key things for exempt versus non-exempt? Obviously, it's not a salary check, but what is it?
Well, that's a good question. And in these exemptions, most of them are based on how independent is the employee. That's number one, in setting their own schedule. And two, is whether they have had an advanced degree of some sort and a certification. These are the major, but the controlling issue is how much freedom does the employee have about the way they go about their job. And if, for instance, a good example, a receptionist who has to sit at the front desk and answer the phones and do other chores is obviously a non-exempt employee. That person is pretty much in control of the corporation's wants for that role. That's the simplest example. But one of the more difficult examples are people that work like in accounting. This is a recent issue with regards to some of these settlements. If that accountant comes to work and pretty much has a routine and that's controlled and approved by their boss, that party, even though they may have a degree, a college degree, may not be exempt at all, even though you may be paying them a salary. And that's another thing I'll bring up. The word salary doesn't indicate anything under the law relative to exempt and non-exempt. Salary is just a means of payment where you pay an employee a fixed amount of money for a fixed period of time. And exempt as well as non-exempt employees are eligible to be paid on a salary basis. Okay? The difference is the exempt employee isn't entitled to overtime where the non-exempt employee is entitled to overtime. Any other questions?
Would supervision or hiring, firing responsibilities, would that have some aspect in terms of this?
Absolutely.
How many people you supervise and so forth?
Absolutely. That is one of the major tests, is if you are supervising two or more people and you have the right to hire and fire them, and you don't do the same work as they do at least 50% of the time, then you would be an exempt employee under the executive exemption, both under federal law and the state law. But remember what I just said. You know, one of the most recent ones was Starbucks that I mentioned. They just settled for $18 million. And that was all around Starbucks managers working in their coffee shops, you know, their bistros or whatever they call them. The manager there did pretty much the same work as the employees did, and the employees were exempt, but the manager was considered, the employees were not exempt, the manager was considered exempt, and they lost that lawsuit. All managers in Starbucks are now non-exempt as well, because they're not doing 50% of their work is not different than their employees they supervise. So that's an important point. Any other questions before I go? I thought it would be nice to maybe go through some of the exemptions. Like I said, in the federal law, there's only four major exemptions to the hourly pay law, and one is executive. We mentioned that. Most presidents of companies, directors of a department that have people reporting to them would be exempt. Administrative, that's a little more difficult. And this is the one that people get tripped up on. most of the time. Because they think, well, administrative, my office manager is administrative. But that's not what they mean by this. This person, and when they say administrative, that person has to be supporting an executive person and having tremendous, has the ability to set and determine things that affect the corporation. Like, for instance, an executive secretary who works for their boss and makes decisions in the boss for the boss, that would be an administrative exception, excuse me. But a typical office manager is only carrying out the role of the manager, answering questions, running the office on a daily basis. It's not making decisions about the corporate structure and the corporate decisions. That it's just not serious enough role, I guess I would put it. And then professional, that exemption is mostly for people have to have advanced degrees, and in most cases have to have something more than a college degree, a license, for instance. Most doctors fall under this role, for instance, engineers who have their certifications would fall under this role. CPAs would fall under a professional exemption. That kind of person. Outside sales, if somebody performs outside sales and works 50% of the time outside the office, they could be exempt employees and very commonly are. And
I ask you a question? What about inside sales?
No. Not unless they have two people working for them and they're not doing the same work as they do 50% of the time. It's very specific. It has to be an outside salespeople person. It falls under that control thing. When they're inside salespeople, you have total control over them. When they're outside salespeople and they have, you know, running around, you don't know where they are most of the time.
That's true.
And they used to have, and up until a couple years ago, like another good example is like IT support people that are out in the road, and you don't really know where they are all the time. And they're pretty free to make decisions, and they were considered exempt. But recently, there has been some decisions because of the advancement in technology and that some of these IT companies have imposed these systems where they really do know where their IT person is all the time. And the IT person running from customer to customer is under control of that person, has to report in every time he gets to a new customer and he leaves and all that kind of stuff. They have ruled recently that that is not an exempt position anymore, even though they're outside. Now, that's not a sales position. That's a you could see where a sales role could get to the point with technology and tracking systems where you have to report in all the time could turn out to be non-exempt position as well.
Hmm.
The last major one is one of interest recently has been computer software developers. That's a new exemption, but it's an unusual exemption because the person is still hourly, but you do not have to pay them time and a half.
Oh, really?
And you can pay them straight time. And
I think you had a question there. Somebody had was asking a question.
Yes. Is there any risk in reporting an employee as an exempt employee or as a non-exempt employee if they really are exempt?
Yeah, there is actually, but it hasn't proven to be a big problem. There is a issue that if you had an employee misclassified, and you go back and you say, "Well, I think I misclassified you, and you're a non-exempt employee now, and you are entitled to overtime," they could technically take you to the labor board and say, "Well, I need all my overtime from the past that I never got paid."
Okay.
And that is a risk, and I've talked to people who are afraid to reclassify their employees based on that. But I have heard of no such cases, not that I know of everything, that an employee being reclassified went back and tried to get unemployment. I mean, get overtime.
But you never know, you know.
You never know. So that is a potential that they were misclassified for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've actually had the problem where people have done that, and the employee doesn't want to be paid hourly or overtime. They want to be considered exempt.
Yeah.
And because of their, you know, their ego, I guess, more than anything. And that's a touchy situation because your employee is saying, I don't want to be paid overtime. I don't want to keep track of my time. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. But it's not to the employer's benefit to, you know, go along with that long run. Because they may come back later and say, well, I want my overtime, and now you're going to pay it. Especially if you have parting ways or somebody gets mad at somebody kind of thing.
Yeah.
So as an example, if somebody was coming to work, let's say the work day began at 8, but they came at 7:15 and started working because they had to drop their wife off somewhere and they were there early and they thought they would just work. Are there any problems if this is a non-exempt employee?
If they file for over, if you do track their time, A is one problem, and they report that time, and they worked 8 hours and 45 minutes instead of 8 hours, you have to pay them overtime. Yes, because the way the labor board looks at it, it's management who is in control, not the labor. And so, therefore, if somebody is doing that, you should be disciplining them and not, or putting in systems that they're not allowed to work those hours. And so that really falls back on managers to enforce the rules. Is the way that the labor board looks at it, and but you have to pay them if you allow that to happen. So the deal is to pay them and then discipline.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people don't pay them and discipline them. That's not the good answer. Any other questions? Okay, we were going through the computer exemption. That's an interesting one because there is a wage requirement within the existing one. And by the way, there is a wage requirement in all non-exempt positions. Non-exempt positions. All exempt positions have to make at least twice the minimum wage. Okay?
Oh,
and that would include commissions and things like that. But they have to make at least twice the minimum wage to be exempt in any kind of job that somebody works. So, and this comes into play mostly in retail, where you may not be paying someone twice the minimum wage, but their overall wage is large enough to qualify because they get commissions or markups or whatever the case may be on the way you do your business. And they can be considered exempt if that's true. But in the computer one, you have to pay employee roughly $75,000 in California to reach that exemption. And anybody doing software development more than $75,000, you only have to pay them their hourly rate if they work more than 40 hours a week. Now, that interplays with another exemption, which is the creative exemption, and that's unique to California, pretty much, because of the Los Angeles and the artistic role that software people are, you know, now doing with regards to, like, films like Nemo and things like that, where that's created on a very artistic manner. And therefore, they do allow that to be an exempt role from overtime. But, again, you still have to pay them hourly if they're making their hourly rate, if they're making less than $75,000, more than $75,000. So if they're making less than $75,000, you can also qualify if they're like a lead person who is hiring a small team of people that are managing those people. They could come under the executive exemption. So because they're more an executive for that little group rather than they are a developer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions about that? Yeah, so the main factor with regards to exempt and non-exempt is how free is the employee to set their own schedule. One of the questions come up with exempt employees sometimes is, do I get an hour for lunch? And an exempt employee, mainly it's control. So if they are looked upon as if they can take an hour for lunch or a half hour for lunch, because that's part of their routine. And they are free to do that. That's part of their freedom. You notice that when I said that, exempt employees, non-exempt employees, have to have at least a half an hour for lunch. And that has to be completed before the sixth hour of the day. And management is responsible to make sure that they get that time off.
What happens if an employee, a non-exempt employee, wants to skip their break or lunch and go home early?
Well, actually, that's two questions. One, the break issue. A non-exempt employee is entitled to a 10-minute break every 4 hours of work, and it's looked upon that that should be in the middle of that four-hour period. It cannot be at the beginning or the end of the workday. So that limits their 10-minute break to the somewhere, anywhere, but in those four-hour periods. So you can't connect them to the beginning of the day or the lunch, take 10 minutes early for lunch or 10 minutes after lunch, or at the end of the day I go home. I don't take my two breaks. That's 20 minutes. I go home 20 minutes early. No, that's not allowed. Okay. Now, what was the second part of that question?
What about skipping lunch to go home early?
That's not allowed under law either. Can't skip lunch. They're entitled. They have to have a half-hour lunch, and management is today responsible to make sure that they get their half-hour lunch. And in California, there's a Supreme Court review going on right now about how much responsibility does management have to enforce that. In other words, the breaks, management only has to make available the opportunity for the break.
Mm-hmm.
The employee can work through the break if they want to, as long as they're not under any pressure to do that. Lunch is not like that. Management today in California, you must get your employee to take their lunch break. They're trying to change that and say, no, if the employee doesn't want to take it, then they don't have to take it. But that's not the law today. You have to force them to take it, basically. Mm-hmm. And that raises questions about, well, I took my lunch to my desk, I worked through my lunch, and I ate my sandwich, and maybe the employee's fine with that. And the problem with that is that could be considered work time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were actually, like, a data processor was eating their lunch and, you know, entering data. And that's a problematic area where the labor board rules that they worked that half hour and therefore they didn't get their lunch. So now not only are they entitled to pay a half hour at a time and a half rate because they worked 8 hours, other than that, they are penalized an hour for every time that occurs.
Wow.
So lunch is another funny part about lunch is, how about if you have a lunch and you're going to do some training at lunch. And so you're going to bring everybody into lunch. You're going to pay for them. You're going to bring lunch in. You're going to have beverages, all that kind of stuff. And so people go to lunch. Well, that's work, according to the labor board. And those employees do not have to attend those things. If you force them to attend them or you hold them accountable in any way, then that's work time.
Hmm.
That's another impact of being hourly. None of these things apply. None of these things apply for exempt employees, by the way. You can do that to an exempt employee,
yeah,
and you don't have to pay them anything.
Hmm.
And you can force them to come to lunch. So,
yeah.
So that's the difference.
I have my employees who were exempt, eat their lunch at the desk, and then take their lunch period to go shopping. Mm-hmm.
They took their lunch. Well, as long as they were free to do whatever they wanted, that's fine.
Yeah.
They got the half hour or hour, whatever you allowed.
Yeah.
And they're free to leave their desk and do what they want. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to eat lunch during that period. If you let them eat lunch early, that's That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's your rule. That's operational. They just need the time off. They need a half hour every day to have a meal in a normal 8-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Ken, what about comp time? I know I had employees that they would like their comp time rather than pay.
Yeah, well, comp time has two areas that are of concern. One is comp time has to be at the same rate as overtime. Okay? So if it's in excess of their normal 8 hours, in other words, this is a time when somebody's worked their 8-hour day and you need them to stay another 2 hours to get something done and out, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and you say, well, you can take comp time for that. Well, in that situation, because that would have been overtime and time and a half would have been applied, then they're entitled to time and a half off.
Okay.
For every hour you took, you know, asked them to work those 2 hours in the example I just gave, you can give them a time, you know, 3 hours, you know, 2 hours, you get an extra time and a half, so it's 3 hours of either pay or 3 hours of comp time. The second element with comp time, it's up to the employee, not up to the company.
Oh.
You can't say you have to work these 2 hours and I'll give you comp time. They could say, no, I want my pay, and you would have to pay them. Okay. And the other area of comp time is when people say they want to take off 2 hours in the middle of the day to go to their dentist or to a doctor or meet appointment or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they say, well, they'll make it up. And the only part of that is you have to make it up in the same pay period. Okay? In other words, if you get paid every week, for instance, then they have to make that time up in the same week. In other words, the next day or 2 days later, say they do that on Tuesday, by Friday, they have to make it up. They can't put it in a bank. Again, this is for a non-exempt employee. Okay, now some companies have comp time for exempt employees, kind of a reward kind of thing. And that brings up the issue, can I pay my exempt employees overtime? Anybody have a comment? Think you can pay your employees overtime? Exempt employees overtime?
No.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
You can pay them overtime, if you wish, without endangering their exempt status. One of the issues, you treat an exempt employee like a non-exempt employee, then they become a non-exempt employee. But in this case, they've ruled recently that paying people on exempt status extra money to do extra things is fine. And
mm-hmm.
you can pay them straight time, you pay them overtime, you can pay them twice time, whatever you want.
Wow.
So.
And that's the up to the company then.
That's up to the company.
Okay.
The big thing in the past, that was always looked upon as something that would endanger that employee being an exempt employee going forward if you paid them over. That has been ruled no. That's not the crux of why they are a non-exempt employee or exempt employee. It's more of this control and the job that they do and whether they have extra credentials. Those kinds of things are the things that determine whether they're exempt or non-exempt, not whether they get paid extra money, doing extra work.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the trends are for enforcement of the law as it exists for exempt and non-exempt employees, but the trends are getting more flexible with whether how you treat exempt employees at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Where it used to be really rigid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if most people know that, you know, in the last year or two, most of the minimum wages have changed. Federal minimum wage now is $7.25 an hour. In California, it's $8 an hour right now. And in July, it goes to $8.25.
Mm-hmm.
And in San Francisco, it's $9.79. No, only San Francisco come up with a number like $9. Any other questions?
Can you make exempt employees take breaks if you want them to?
Yeah, you could do that.
Okay.
I mean, I don't see what the point of that would be, but...
No.
But,
okay.
You know, it would be one of those things that, you know, that they would look at. Is that something that crosses over and makes them more like an exempt employee, non-exempt employee? But it's only one thing, so it wouldn't necessarily mean anything.
Okay.
I mean, it might be something in your business that would make your business orderly if people took their breaks at certain times rather
right.
than randomly. That would be fine.
Okay. And lunch hours as well, if you make all employees take the same lunch hour?
Yep.
Okay.
For coverage, for instance, that would be a good reason you do that. Okay.
Okay.
But if your exempt employee came to you and said, I don't want lunch, I'm just going to stay here and work, that's fine.
Right.
Where your non-exempt employee said that, you say no. Go to lunch.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Doing pretty good.
Good. Yeah, this is a subject matter that people deal with every day, and it's what I would say is a very misunderstood subject, and very frankly, from the other side of the coin, there are not clear rules in most cases about some of these positions. In some cases there are, but the everyday administrative type exemption is a very, very difficult thing to determine. And it's a very dangerous one. For instance, J.P. Morgan lost a huge suit a couple years ago because they had all their auditors considered exempt because they were all accounting. They had accounting degrees, and they would go in and work, you know, 10 hours a day doing audits and stuff like that. But they were all ruled non-exempt. I get that mixed up myself now. They were all considered non-exempt because they were just doing audit work that was predetermined. Yes, they had a degree, but they didn't have any flexibility in their work schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what they had to do and accomplish every day was pretty well defined for them. And therefore, they were considered non-exempt and were entitled to overtime. And they lost like $34 million lawsuit over it.
Oh, my
so
God.
They come back and pay all those people.
Wow.
Yeah. Anything else?
Not for me.
Well, you know, basically, this is my business, this is what I do, and we do this, we focus on mostly small companies where sometimes they don't have access to professional HR and may need that on a part-time basis, and to take care of those kind of things and inform the, you know, get things set up correctly and right, and so you don't get into trouble down the road as you grow and become a bigger business. And so we do this both on a retained basis and an hourly basis. We also do phone support for clients who have just questions, and employee manuals we develop for clients as well. So that's our business, and we, like I say, we tend to focus on the small growing company versus the larger companies.
And Ken, do you help with hiring or
yeah.
interviewing process?
Mm-hmm. We do the interviewing process for some of our clients that want that, or at least another opinion, some more objective interview, you might say, because oftentimes smaller companies have very little experience interviewing people. You know, most companies, small companies, they start out, they know everybody they hire. You know, it's like friends, family. And then they get to a certain point where they have to hire, they hire from the general pool of people. And that's where they start having problems hiring people. And I've been very helpful in giving them more of an objective opinion of someone rather than whether they were just a nice guy or a nice gal.
Right. You know, I've heard, too, that with people now, with the job situation as it is now, there are a lot of applicants to go through. and getting the right fit for someone who's not, you know, not had the experience on how to find the right fit. That can be very daunting. I've heard people saying, it was hard to find the person, and then when I found the applicant, I thought I found the fit, it really wasn't, you know. So,
yeah, what I found in those situations, one of the big things is that generally the person doesn't write down any criteria before they start. I think it's very valuable to sit down and write, okay, what is acceptable for this job, or, you know, what isn't acceptable? Because as you start interviewing people, you start getting lost. And if you don't go back to that, you know, this is what I said I wanted, because you met somebody that really, like, clicked with you, or, you know, was, you know, had other qualities that you thought might be useful over, but it's not the job you wanted at the time. And so then you pull yourself into hiring someone, and generally they're not happy because they're not doing what they thought they were going to be doing, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I know that being in management myself, going through some of our training classes, et cetera, managers or whomever's going to hire, a lot of times they will hire people like them.
Yeah.
It kind of works that way because, yeah, we all like to work with the people that we're like, you know. But in the end, and I know you, Ken, you know this too, that you don't want to do that. You want to hire based upon the job fit. And if you're somebody that's not very analytical and more social, you know, if you're hired to be doing that job that's analytical and you're more social, it's going to drive you crazy and it's not a fit.
Right.
You know, so it's really important, I think. I've seen this time and time again where the managers will find their entire team is just like them. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not really how you build a team. So
yeah, and you don't get any diversity there. You don't get diversity of ideas or opinions. They all think in the same way.
Yeah, that's not good. You know? But it's funny how that can work.
Yep.
Be careful.
All right.
Well, thank you for your presentation. I got a lot out of it.
I think that
thank
was
you for all
great.
Taking your time and doing this.
It was a great presentation.
Mm-hmm. And, Ken, people have any questions or they can check your website. Do you want to give your website information and your phone number or email out so we've got it on the audio?
Yeah. Our website is www.mmwi.com, and there's some helpful items on there as well. We try to keep up to date. And my phone number is 925-838-9163. And my email is just simply Ken, K-E-N, at mmwi.com. Feel free to contact me any of those ways, and very free to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Ken, let me ask you, we've got some more time. I wanted to ask you, do you work with any specific type of small business, or are you open to working with all different kinds of industries?
Well, over the last 10 years, I've worked at almost all any kind of industry, from manufacturing to IT consulting to software development, insurance company. I've really had to run the gauntlet of types of companies that small companies that I might be helpful to. And it really depends on, you know, like I said, we're trying to help small companies have a professional HR function. And companies who want to get that established early, make sure they have documents and have procedures and blah, 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 and processes, then we are a good fit for that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. I know I worked with a client that was a very small company, three or four people, and they really had no policies. They did, you know, they had no job descriptions, nothing like that. So you can handle something like that where, you know, that's not my area of specialty, quite frankly. And so if I refer them to you, then you can take over and help them with those specific issues, correct?
Yes, if they had issues at that size. I find most companies at that size don't really have issues, and if they do, they really have problems.
Yeah, they do. That's why they called me in.
Yeah, right.
They really did, yeah.
Most of those are personality problems, usually.
Yeah.
Right.
You definitely, yeah. Well, we've got a little more time. Does anybody else have any questions about anything else they'd like to learn about? Ken is so talented. I mean, he's worked all over, and he's got such an expertise, I have to tell you.
What about implementing performance evaluations? Do you do that type of stuff, too?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes. I consider that's one of the key areas as companies get bigger to have some form of performance evaluation. And it doesn't have to be that complicated. Some people go to great extremes. And the biggest thing comes out of, in my opinion, the biggest thing that comes out of performance reviews is getting managers to talk to their employees about performance and goals and objectives. And it's amazing how many managers just go through the year without ever talking specifically about, you know, what the objectives are for each job.
I think it could run into, what's the word I was looking for, when if you have to terminate employees and you don't have evaluations, does that trigger any risk in your mind?
Well, yes, in some ways, but not a large. The biggest risk is someone giving somebody a raise and then firing them for cost.
Okay.
I mean,
and
it happens unbelievably more often than you think in small companies, because they give everybody a raise, they don't do performance reviews, they end up giving somebody a raise, and then a month later or 2 months later, they're upset with that person and they want to fire him for something. And
mm-hmm.
you talk to him, well, he's never been a really good performer, or she's never, you know, and why did you give him a raise? And, you know, well, we gave everybody a raise. Well, that doesn't look very good in a review by an independent party saying, okay, you gave this person a 5% raise 3 months ago, and now you're firing him for cause. You know, what happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, he's always been a problem. Then why did you give him a raise?
Okay, thank you.
And, I was reading, I think, someplace in the HR magazine, but, and you can help me out, Ken, here, and that I believe the two top concerns right now with businesses would be business development, sales development, and then reengaging the employees because of all the things that's been going on, layoffs, et cetera. And have you found that at all to be true in your...
My opinion right now, I think the problem is you have a lot of employees who haven't been, might say, treated well during this period. You've kept them because they were your better employees in
right.
terms of skills or whatever. And those people are just waiting to leave when time comes better. And the advantage you have right now is you could address some of that right now. Many people had to lay people off and didn't give raises and things like that. And you had to do that sometimes to survive in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But not addressing that, especially on an individual basis, you really have a time bomb waiting to go off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So you definitely,
when I was doing... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
When I was doing corporate training and there was issues... I did a lot of personality style or behavioral style training, which helps in the hiring process and understanding each other. But there is, a certain behavioral style that they can go around and stir up trouble if things are not addressed out in the open. So you really want to take care of that, as you said, Ken, you know, deal with it immediately, so it doesn't become a huge, huge problem.
And a lot of people just are afraid to deal with it. They just, in small companies, well, I don't want to cause trouble, or I don't want to, you know, they just keep it in their back of their heads for when something else goes wrong, or they have pressure financially, and then now they have the chance to get rid of that person.
Right.
That's not always good. Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, companies such as yours, Ken, is vitally important, because some of these people, they truly don't understand the importance of the law and how it can actually turn on them. So by communicating, you know, job performance, and people always really want to know how well they're doing on their job. And I know some of their main complaints can usually be, you know, I never know whether what I'm doing. You know, I never get feedback. And so, you know, your company being able to outsource your knowledge and information is absolutely incredible, especially for these small businesses that they couldn't possibly have a department just for that, and it's the backbone of their organization.
Yep.
Really.
Yeah. Yep. And I always call it, like, you know, make your company a culture of feedback. You know, make
right.
that part
right.
of your culture, that there's a regular feedback going on. And
and
like I said, some people go to great extremes and spend a tremendous amount of time on, you know, developing performance feedback systems. I'm kind of the belief, in a small company in particular, you don't have to go to all that trouble. Your more need is just time to sit down and talk to each other about performance and do simple goals. And you can do that in 15 minutes a quarter. You know, it doesn't have to be a big deal.
When I was, years ago, when I was working in corporate America, I had about 30 staff of 30, and the evaluation process really was very simple for 30 employees that I had, but it also included, you know, looking at your goals and setting your goals, how well the performance was, but then how I could help them as a manager and what kind of tools could I give them so that they could improve. And, you know, I think that's a vitally important piece that some managers are never trained to do that, and they don't understand even how to operate in that function that way. But your productivity and your performance goes straight up, absolutely straight up.
Yeah, I mean, it's like attention. It just shows you care for your employees,
right.
and you're wanting them to get ahead. You're going to spend time supporting them and growing them. And what would be more complimentary than that? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I always tell the story that when I do references, background reference, not background checks, but references with, if I always ask the question is, what would you recommend for this person to work on? You know, thinking of you as the manager, and you know, and you sit down and do your reviews. You know, obviously this person's a good person, but what would you think they needed to work on? And there's so many people say, well, I can't think of anything. This person's perfect. And I always say, well, I don't know. I always leave that with saying, what kind of manager is that? He's not offering
anything
at all.
Right, exactly. To grow and succeed, I mean, I believe every person, every employee really wants to do the best that they can. They really do. And it's just whether or not they're getting the help, the assistance, or they're even getting feeling that the company even cares.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of the customer service issues. And right now, with the business the way it is going now, customer service is the top. I mean, you've really got to be good on customer service right now. And even low-touch customer service is incredible. So, you know, bring a little of value system more into the business itself.
Yeah, and if the manager doesn't care, I don't care what the company does. It really won't matter.
No, absolutely. But then, again, in the manager's position, they're kind of caught in the middle.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So, Yeah, you know, I used to say managers are people too, you know. So they're getting it from above and they're getting it from below. So they've got to have a good head on their shoulders and know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I had a publisher I used to work with. And she had hired me for a management position. Actually, it was in Pleasanton. Years ago, a management position. And she said, Diane, the reason why I hired you is because you're a warm and fuzzy person, you keep people happy, and I don't want to see anybody in my office. She was a very dominant type of personality, and she knew that was not her strength. So she wanted me to handle the detail crap without these other people, you know, so that their job could get done and they were happy about it. So,
yep.
You know, you have different styles for everyone. And there's not really one good style for a manager or a leader. I think they're all different.
Well, that's what you were going back to, hiring different kinds of people and having different kinds of people around you to complement the overall relationship. You don't have to be everything to everybody yourself.
That's right. And entrepreneurs, I think, too, sometimes they can get in a spot where they think they have to be everything to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you simply cannot. You don't have time.
Yes. So, going back to that, to our subject center directly, is that, you know, if you have employees, you should make sure you have them at least do some kind of review of their statuses. And there's lots of guidelines. The Chamber of Commerce has stuff online. The Department of Labor in California has things online that help you guide you. And you know, you don't have to necessarily get the employee involved in doing it, just so to comfort yourself. You ought to go through these guidelines and what you're asking the employees to do, and get yourself comfortable that if somebody raised the question, you could defend the way they're classified. Or hire somebody to do it, because it's a very, you can get hit with huge fines, and it only takes one employee, and then you got a bunch of, because they'll reclassify all your employees when they do that. When they do an audit of you based on somebody filing a complaint, you may have whole groups of people that need reclassifying.
Oh, my goodness.
So you ought to take some time and read those things and make sure, okay, I can defend this. At least, I mean, you might not be right, but you at least have some defense.
I'll call you.
Something. It'll be enlightening, I think.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other questions?
I don't.
Okay. Ken, I think this was absolutely wonderful. I do want to let everybody know that actually on the live call that we will be sending the auto replay link probably tomorrow. We'll try and get it out this afternoon if at all possible. And you'll receive the email giving you the link so that you can download it on your computer or your MP3, whatever you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And have it for always. And please feel free to contact myself, Diane Fleck, at the Learning Cafe, if you would like to hear more from Ken or have any other questions around business. We do have a very active advisor network, and I really listen to our clients to see what kind of topics they're interested in and what kind of topics they really need information on to run a successful business. And that's what our pledge is to you. So, Ken, I thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much, Diane, and everybody that's been take the time out of your schedule. Thank you.
It was great.
Great. Thank you. And so I'm just going to go ahead and end the call then. There are no other questions, and I thank you all. I think our next, I think our next class is on May 20th, if I recall, and that is the Mentors Roundtable with Carol, Adrian, and myself. And we're doing this as a six-month series. So it's very exciting. It's called Step Up and Step Out, How to Move Forward Now. And Carol is a best-selling author and been on Oprah and Good Lord, she's been all over the world. Her books have been translated to 15 different languages, and she's a great friend of mine. So for more information on that, you can go to the website, www.thelearning-cafe.com. And I hope to see you all on our next call. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.